listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow.
This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to Empower the Spirit Radio. My name is Doug Kelly. So good to have you. I'm, of course, here with Dr. Vicki Hunter. Hey, Vicki.
Good evening, everybody.
And this, of course, is the show for October 30th, 2011, day before Halloween. We're going to be talking about energy signatures and the arts of divination with Dr. Vicki Hunter at the second half of the hour. I'm apparently going to learn how to read tea leaves.
Yes, you will. Tea leaves and teacups, they're one and the same.
So it should be interesting. Of course, Empower of the Spirit is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science, part of our regular educational services. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit. We welcome those who are listening to this live broadcast, as well as those listening to the archives. So good to have you. If you are listening live and you have a question, we'd love to hear it. You can type it in the chat room, or you can give us a call, 714-459-3973. Reverend John Hightower is manning the phones tonight, as usual, so he will be there to take your call. So if you've got a question or comment, you're more than welcome to give us a ring and join in on the discussion. And, of course, at the bottom of the hour, we have Living Free with Reverend Camille Edwards and her five-minute segment on herbology and related stuff. You know, stuff is a technical term, so we use it in a technical way. All right, so let's get on with this show. Tonight, I'm going to be talking about the topic of understanding and reading energy signatures. And much to Vicki's chagrin, I'm going to be demystifying this a little bit.
I said, but Doug, I believe in energy signatures.
Oh, I do too.
So do I.
Yes, so, duh, yeah, of course. But what we're going to do is, you know, energy and all that is thrown around a lot by a lot of folks, and it's so metaphysical, you know. And it is, but let's really talk about what it is and how to look at it and how to view it. And we're going to not only talk about what energy is, what energy signatures are, but we're going to talk about the energy of a location, for example. We're going to talk about the energy of people, even the energy of relationships a little bit. Now, I have in a previous episode some months ago talked about relationships, and I did discuss energy signatures a little bit in that one. So we'll talk a little bit about that again within the context of understanding and reading energy signatures. If you look up the dictionary on energy, which, by the way, is all around us, and you don't really have to be a psychic to pick up on different energies. If you look up in the dictionary, the basic definition of energy is the capacity or power to do work. You know, we all know what energy is. It's power. It does something, you know. But we can also look at energy in a little bit of a different way. Energy can exist in different types. For example, there's electrical energy, mechanical energy, chemical energy, thermal, nuclear. There's kinetic. There's potential energy. There's just different types of energy. And so we kind of want to focus on the types. And some other synonyms that would be apropos within our discussion, especially when you're in a location. When we talk about the energy of a place, we're often talking about the atmosphere, the ambiance of a particular place. And so it's nothing too mystical or anything like that. It's a vibe. It's a feeling. And so if you think about it, wherever you are right here, right now, look at your surroundings. and just take a second and just tune into it for a moment. Just and by that I just mean look at it and consciously think of where you're at. There's a particular atmosphere or energy of the room that you're in right now or the place that you're in. If you were to walk into a different room of your house or wherever you're at, the atmosphere would change, wouldn't it? It'd be a little bit, has a little bit of a different energy. If you go outside, a little bit of a different energy. So think of it in terms of an atmosphere, an ambiance, you know, just the feeling you get. Now, and Vicki, you feel free to jump in anytime you have something you'd like to add in here.
Well, actually, I was looking around my atmosphere, and a fly appeared. And I hope that's not an eve before Halloween kind of thing, because I have not seen a fly in here in days. And suddenly, as you're talking, I went, oh, don't tell me somebody's visiting me.
Oh, you're cursed.
Well, of course, there's energy everywhere. And often when we go into any kind of environment, it each has its own signature. You know, feng shui is a perfect example of that. You know, when people move the energy or how the energy flows in a room, that's a perfect example of, I think, the kind of energy also you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you think about it, a fly coming into the room, it's going to change the energy of it in a subtle way, isn't it? It's got a different atmosphere now. You've got the annoying fly. I mean, yesterday we were at a place eating a burger, and there was a fly that was buzzing us, and you know, everything was great except the fly was a bit annoying. I mean, we've all had that experience. So if you think about energy in those terms, it's not so mystical, is it? It's not so ambiguous. It's just the atmosphere of a place. So think about that, and while you're at it, it does help to consciously tune in to wherever you're at. So try doing that from the places you go, whether it's to work, whether it's to a different room in your house, whether it's to the store, grocery store, or a department store. Think about it. Is there a different atmosphere or energy signature between Walmart and, you know, a clothing store?
Well, I might add in here, Doug, that there's a tremendous amount of money put into the psychology of color and architecture and how it makes people feel, hospitals in particular. What colors make you feel safe, warm, healing kinds of colors. At the same time, they work a lot on colors in prisons to keep people calm.
Right.
You know, so these are the things I think, if we really take a look at the energy in different places, you'll see the difference in color, how all the fixtures are set up, where the doorways are, and that kind of thing. So that's a very obvious kind of way of looking at energy too.
It is, and if you think about some places' claim to fame is their very elegant atmosphere, like a restaurant. I was in a restaurant a week ago for a UFO lecture, and it was up in Clearwater, Florida. Nice place. I mean, the lights were a little bit low, and it was very well done. It was just a beautiful place.
It made you want to eat there.
Yeah, it did. It
Absolutely.
Was just really nice. And so that's the atmosphere. That's the energy of a place. So depending on what you're involved with in metaphysics, it could be, you know, paranormal research. It could be anything like that. When you're in a particular location, what does the energy tell you? What does the atmosphere tell you about the place, about the people who live there? You know, and just take it in. That's the cool thing, you know. You can go to a beautiful outdoor place. There's a different energy about Arizona than there is about, you know, the Great White North up in, you know, like the Yukon or Alaska or Australia or Japan or Europe. You know, they all have their own atmospheres, their own energies. So it's really nothing too mystical.
The other thing I might add in here is these places that we go to, they invest an awful lot of money and energy also in the music. You know, that there are places, that stores that you go into, they want you in and out. So it's kind of a more upbeat kind of music. If they're slower, mm-hmm. kind of, you know, called elevator music, they want you to hang around. So you'll find that very often busier restaurants, you know, the ambience, they're very particular about the kind of music so that they can turn that table over. Mm-hmm. They want you to enjoy yourself, but they want the table done in like an hour and a half, 2 hours. So it's very interesting to look at the psychologies and the sociologies, again, those basic, obvious things. And when you're going into somebody's home, it, usually we overlook the most obvious things. You know, it's, you ask somebody, well, what kind of books do you like to read? You know, and there's a whole wall of bookshelves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the things, it's called just that basic observation. So I think really what I would suggest to people is, you know, put on your observation hat and really take in all the surroundings and how they feel. So you've got to, it tells you, it gives you a lot of information, but it gives you a feel also. This is exclusive of the people, I might add, because people give off a different energy signature too.
And we'll get to that in a minute.
The places draw a certain kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's why to watch the environments of places.
And you bring up a good point too, because music can change the energy of a place, the atmosphere of a place. So, you know, whether it's live music or recorded music, again, both different types of energies. And there is a question in the chat room. Is the energy in the room, or could it be the decor provokes in us creating a certain energy within us? You know, and again, I can go into a particular room and say, well, this has got a real good energy about it. And somebody else could come in and say, I don't like the energy of this room. So again, it can be a personal preference.
You know, there's something we talked about quite a number of shows back, Doug, that it was about how it can trigger an emotional response in us.
Mm-hmm.
If we had a particularly negative experience with a color, for instance, and it could very well be a childhood thing or, you know, a teacher that scared you and the room was green, you know, that really awful muted pukey green I'm talking about. And then you go into another place like that and it's like, oh, I don't feel good here. We have to be very aware of how it triggers our own prejudices, like our own feeling, because otherwise it would be a perfectly fine room, but it has triggered an emotional response. So this is the beauty of taking opportunity to self-observe and self-study, and you just learn something about yourself, and right away it kind of releases.
And so there's also the concept that Camille had brought up about energy vortexes in various purported places around the globe. There's also ley lines, you know, controversial, yes, but people believe them to be. So there are places that could have an energy vortex. I've heard of some paranormal researchers talking about a particular vortex in a part of the home, like in a closet or in some room. And, you know, who knows? You know, there's a lot of people who believe that there are a number of vortexes in and around Sedona, right, Vicki?
Yes. I love that. I like the way you threw that question right in there, slipped it in, Doug.
Yeah.
Doug knows that I love Sedona, and I'm going there next week, and I'm going to be live from Sedona next Sunday evening. So I hope some of you tune in. We're going to talk more about vortexes at that time. My favorite place is Bell Rock, of course. It's one of the largest vortexes there. But I recently found out that I live about half an hour from a vortex that's equivalent to the Sedona energy. And it's very interesting, but I also live in a Bible Belt, so I wonder about vortexes. Sedona attracts a very eclectic spiritual community, and up here, of course, it has its own version of eclectic spiritual. So, you know, it's that kind of, they will attract certain people and certain things, and not always what we expect either.
A lot of people get some healing, get some, I don't know, you know, they can kind of tune into themselves and find some answers and that sort of thing too.
Doug, I have one spot in my house that if I pass by it with the phone, mm-hmm. it'll go all crackly. If I have my cell phone there, it'll go dead. It's like this tiny little, about 2 feet, you know, across. I couldn't tell you if it's a circle or not. I have no idea. I'm just saying that there's this one spot in the kitchen that anything mechanical or electronic goes wonky. So I'm convinced that it's a mini vortex, if there is such a thing. Just this little spot. Because it's not a spirit. It's at that particular point. It's an energy kind of feel. Doesn't happen anywhere else in the house, just right there.
It could be, and it could also be, I mean, there are places in buildings, too, that are the result of simply the construction. You know,
oh,
whether
you
there's,
just took all the fun out
I
of
it. I know. Just, you know, I'm always killing the fun. I know it.
You're absolutely right. It could be. There could very well be a cross-wiring in the floors, in between the floors. There could be any number of electrical kinds of reasons for it. But, you know, I really quite prefer the vortex theory.
Well, then you just go right along. Go ahead. Believing as you do, that's fine. So we've talked about some places. Energy signatures, energy is like atmosphere. You know, tune into it. And as a matter of practice, and just to get some experience with it, just tune into whatever atmosphere you're in at any particular given time, wherever you're at. Compare the two. And then you'll be able to tune in a little bit more. Now let's kind of turn our discussion a little bit toward people. As I've said in the previous show, and as I've written about a lot, people have energy signatures too. We all know this. We all pick up a vibe from people. Sometimes if the vibe is strong, it can be either strongly negative or it can be strongly positive, and we really pick up on it. For example, today, Tracy and I were eating breakfast out at a restaurant here, a local place. And we were leaving and walking through the door, and there's a little entryway, so there's really two doors going into the restaurant. We were coming out the first door, and there was a fellow coming in the outside door, and he was holding it for us. And he had, I just looked at him, and I instantly noticed he had such a good energy about him. He was smiling. He was, you know, pleasant smile, nicely dressed. You know, he was just pleasant. I just couldn't help but notice that. Wow, you know, I just really got a good vibe from this fella, and he held the door for us. So it happens all the time. We get a vibe from people. We all have our own particular energy signature, and that energy signature is made up, or is what it is, due to our self-belief, really, and who, you know, what we think about ourselves, our attitudes, our knowledge, our experiences. It's, you know, our preferences, our beliefs, all that go into making our energy signature. And of course, as I've brought out before, that the best relationships are when energy signatures are harmonically compatible. If you think about an illustration such as a song that's in tune, that all the instruments that are in this song are playing in tune, they're all harmonically compatible. And it's a beautiful thing. But if you've ever heard somebody sing way off key or instruments that weren't quite in tune, you can kind of get an idea of how incompatible energy signatures can cause relationship issues. We can pick up on these energy signatures of people. And also, as I've talked about before, like attracts like, you know. Contrary to popular belief, opposites don't attract, they repel. It's no different than that song again. If it's a harmonically compatible song, it sounds good, everything's in tune, and it's pretty. If it's everything's out of tune, you know, the harmonies are not compatible. And so as you look at people and read people, and that's another area to practice in, is in reading people. And most of us can read people to an extent, but what kind of vibe are you getting? Make a conscious effort to tune in to the vibe of people around you. And everything can change these energy signatures too. Like if you're in a room alone, you have a certain energy, right? If somebody else comes into that room, the energy changes, doesn't it? Have you ever gone to a place and maybe you have a friend or an acquaintance or a relative or somebody who's really a negative person, very negative person? Well, they have that negative energy. And when they come in, it kind of sucks the life out of everything. But when they leave, you can just feel the room lift. You feel the energy lift.
I call those vampires.
Yeah, they are. Energy vampires. Well, that's negative energy. And they usually do suck the positive energy out of people. But we also know people who are like that, energy vampires. They high maintenance, needy, people who just talk and won't shut up. They suck energy. You know, they're energy vampires. You know, it's we all know them. So tune in to people. If anybody has any other questions on this in the chat room, I'll take them. I'm getting to the end of my portion, but I wanted to talk about that. Go ahead.
You know, here's the thing about what do you do, Doug, and maybe there's something we can just add in here for everyone. And, you know, I need a little refresher myself. What if there's someone you have to deal with, but you have a contrary energy? Mm. What if you really don't like them? And you have no particular reason. Well, you could probably find one if you thought about it long enough, but they just rub you the wrong way. How do you manage that energy?
Good question. Well, here's how I suggest, and I'm sure you have a suggestion too. As far as that goes, you have to protect your own energy. There's a variety of ways of doing that. One way is to create a bubble, an imaginary bubble around yourself of, you know, a force field of sorts. You're in a white light. It's a protective bubble, and it prevents people from sucking your energy or from contaminating your energy, their energy contaminating yours. That's a simple visualization. And it's really results, not, again, nothing mystical here. It really results in an attitude on your part. It results in a way of dealing with them that you don't invest your energy into their energy or allow their energy into yours.
And then I could just call Doug and debrief.
Well, you know, that's true too.
You know, this is a really good subject because I know you've talked about this in relationships in past, but when boy meets girl, girl meets boy, you meet somebody and you feel that attraction, but they're really bad news. How come it is in that energy signature we're drawn to things that are not good for us?
Yeah.
You know, that like attracts like when we can't quite nail it. You know, it's like you got that attraction, but it's like a bad gut feeling, but you go for it anyway, you know? And in the, somehow in our patterns, perhaps, and things that we're tripping over, I call that emotional tripping over in ourselves, that we keep getting it, like that attraction to things that we need to figure out. But again, you know, it's why do we do that? Because a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, so there's some ideas, folks, on understanding and reading energy signatures. We can read them if we just look for them, if we just consciously monitor what kind of energy or atmosphere does this room have, what kind of energy does this person have, and we can pick up on things, and the more you do it, the more you're attuned to it, and the more you know, and at least, if nothing else, you'll be a little more conscientious about your own surroundings, about things, so...
Well, it is that word again, observation. You know, we all observing things about each other. But the thing is, you can observe yourself through your experiences with others. And I guess the question is, why am I having this response? And I think that's always the best place to start.
Well, and self-study. Oh, of course, it's always the, you know, look within. I mean, in the chat room, you know, right, why do women like bad boys? Well, not all women like bad boys, but this is part of that whole energy signature thing and compatibility. And I'll just say this as we wrap up this section, and there's a much deeper discussion of this in course 4 of the IMHS PhD degree program. But we are, you know, our energy signatures, if we think about why do we have relationships with toxic people? And probably most of us have had these. Why are we in this kind of a relationship? Well, what is it about our energy signature that has been compatible with this other toxic person? Well, there is something that's compatible with them. Remember, like attracts like. So we have to look within and understand what, you know, look at ourselves. What are our beliefs? Our self-belief is the biggest one. What are our beliefs? And what are the secondary gains? Because on a conscious level, we might not like this other person, but remain in a close relationship with them. Why? because we benefit in some way. There's some secondary gain at stake here. And a lot of times we're not willing to give that up. And that's why people remain in unhealthy relationships. Remember, they say opposites attract. You can have one person who's really outspoken and one person who's really quiet. Well, and yet they're together. And they would think, well, opposites attract. Well, that's not true. They both have unhealthy, potentially unhealthy energy signatures. So therefore, like attracts like. They're both unhealthy. They're different, yeah, but they're both unhealthy. Like attracts like.
And they compensate for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's secondary gains. I love that term that you have, Doug. It's really the perfect thing that fits for so many,
right.
So many things. It's secondary gains. It's not your first gain, it's your secondary gain.
Right. Like the little boy who can't get enough attention from his parents, so instead of acting good, he acts out. He acts bad. He gets negative attention, but he still gets that attention. Secondary gains. He acted out in order to get that attention. So anyway, some interesting stuff. Hope it's helped. And before we move on to Living Free with Camille Edwards, let's take just a quick minute. Get your mindset in that energy mode and send out some positive energy to those who are having a difficult time. If you are having a difficult time, just kind of suck in that positive energy from the universe. Just bring it in that bubble, that protective bubble, that nurturing bubble. But also send some out to those who are in need, those who are having a hard time. And a lot of people are. Send it to the planet. Take a moment and do that.
And that concludes the first half of our show. And we're coming up for Living Free with Reverend Camille Edwards. Welcome to this evening, Camille.
Hi, Vicki. How's it going?
Good. Can't wait to hear what you have for us tonight.
Well, I have a little story, so I think everyone will enjoy it. All right. Good evening, everyone. Tonight, I have a story and an herb. This cooler weather that we recently have been having reminds me of an incident that took place a few years back. Janice, a dear friend and herbal business partner, signed up to attend a pagan weekend retreat as vendors. Now, keep in mind, she and I were very new to this alternative world of religion and beliefs, and still quite naive in some aspects. Janice is what I refer to as a spiritual Christian, whereas I tend to have a more open-minded approach when dealing with religion and spiritualism. Anyway, back to the story. We got to this camp way out in the wilderness and set up shop. As a vendor, one requirement was that we participate in all spiritual gatherings. The gatherings were very poetic, inclusive of Mother Nature, and very spiritual. After the gathering, we found our cabin and selected our bunks for the weekend. Back at our booth, everyone was coming up to meet us, telling us welcome. Now, these people were just like us, and we felt very comfortable with the group. The question of the day was, what type of pagan belief are you? To which Janice would reply, we're vendors. You might say that making money was our religion of the moment. That evening, returning to our cabin, much to our concern, we noticed that the temperature was rapidly dropping after a surprising heat wave that early spring. It was getting cold, and we were not properly packed. Walking into the cabin, we were greeted by these two very Amazonian women, our roommates. Both had shaved heads and various tattoos all over their bodies and wore camouflage clothing. They chose to sleep out on the porch of the cabin and had all the gear required for cool weather camping. Both snored horribly loud all night long. The next day, I had a few moments before dinner and got to meet one of our roommates on a more intimate level. Sitting out on the deck, she informed me that she was a witch and was at war with some of other witches who were also participating in this event. It was all very political. She also proceeded to tell me that she had recently buried her 2-year-old son in her backyard. Okay, folks, this woman was scary. I will confess, she scared the living bejesus out of me. At my 5'7", I was tiny next to her, and not only was she huge, she had this walleye that would move off to the side on its own orbit while she spoke to you. She told me the story that when she was a child, her parents had sent her to live with an African village. She is white because the walleye was great magic, and as a child, the villagers trained her to become a shaman. As a token of the villagers' appreciation of her strong magic, they gave her this beautiful hand-carved drum. It was huge, and she handled it like it weighed nothing. That second night, we had our first drumming session. A band was there, all Wiccan, who just happened to meet while attending the Juilliard School of Arts. Needless to say, these women were all extremely talented. The music was rocking, women were belly dancing, and it was wonderful. When in walks our cabin witch with her big African drum. She walks up to the stage, sat her drum down, and promptly began to beat out a rhythm that was so far off key that it was horribly evident. You could see the other band members looking at each other, but to their credit, they kept playing and singing as though nothing was going on. I had to leave just to keep from being killed from laughing so hard. The temperature dropped to the low 30s that night, and all we had were light covers. It was not only a strange, scary experience for us staying with this wacky witch and her dangerously quiet roommate who only spoke two words the whole weekend, yes, no. It was also the coldest night of our lives. Janice actually turned this really strange shade of gray-blue, but we survived the night, and the next day the temperature was back in the 80s. One more thing, very late that night when I got up to go to the outhouse, never fails, the colder you are, the more you have to get up to go pee, the dangerously quiet roommate was standing off of the forest trail just to the side where most would not see her, just standing, watching. It was so weird. The last day of our camp, our roommates mysteriously packed up and left, just as mysteriously as they had arrived. We were able to breathe a sigh of relief, but you know, look at it this way. Yeah, they were very scary, very weird, not eccentric, just weird, and they did their own thing regardless of what the others thought. You might say that our to the beat of her own drum. You do have to admire that. The dangerously quiet roommate, well, we never saw her doing anything. Never stayed in the woods. Now it's herb time. Chickweed. Chickweed is a medicinal and very edible. Very nutritious, high in vitamins and minerals. As a food, it can be added to salads or cooked, tasting somewhat like peppery spinach. The whole plant is used as an astringent, diuretic, expectorant, laxative, and refrigerant, to name a few. A decoction of the whole plant is taken internally as a postpartum circulatory tonic. It is also used to relieve constipation. An infusion of the dried herb is used for coughs and hoarseness and is beneficial in the treatment of kidney complaints because it is a diuretic. Research indicates its use as an antihistamine. It is also effective for itchy skin complaints. Janice and I use chickweed in just about all of our salves. The folklore behind chickweed is that it is used in the treatment for obesity. Yep, it may make you urinate a bit more, getting rid of excess fluid weight. But after a week or two of using chickweed, you won't be losing as much fluid as in the beginning. So the weight loss slows down at that point. Don't plan on it as a weight loss method. Chickweed prefers the cooler days of autumn and early spring, so enjoy her many benefits while you can. Well, that's all I have for tonight. And good thoughts to all of you on this Hallows Eve. Live well, live free. This has been Camille Edwards. Good night, everyone.
Another interesting topic on Living Free with Camille Edwards. MCHS does not intend to prescribe, recommend, or otherwise treat illnesses or afflictions. If you're ill, please see your medical practitioner for a diagnosis and any medicinal prescriptions, doses, or treatments. It's been reported that some herbs may interfere with surgery. If you're currently on any medication or herbal products, please advise your doctor or dentist at first point of contact.
Well, once again, Camille, I have this picture of these Amazonian women and the drum, It's very visual. It's beautiful. Thank you very much, Reverend Camille Edwards, Living Free. Well, Doug, and we enter now into our, I'm still chuckling, our second half of our show. Just for everyone to know, you're welcome to put your questions into the chat room, and you can certainly call in. John Hightower is on the phones if you'd like to phone us, 714-459-3973. I'm Dr. Vicki Hunter, and Dr. Douglas Kelly is with me in the second half hour. Tell me you're chuckling, Doug.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to find it chuckling later when I learn how to read tea leaves.
Well, you know, the second half of the show, we're going to talk about the arts of divination right now. And probably the oldest way of reading that goes back thousands of years is bones. You know, and a lot of the old, spiritual people, the shamans, the medicine men, they'd always have this little pouch of bones. That could be animal bones. And, you know, in some communities, they were human bones. And so I was just picturing, you know, what if these women had opened their little pouch of bones and dumped them on the floor? So we go back, you know, the divination can be, we mentioned this a little bit last week, you can read anything. The older tools for this, though, Doug, were sticks, rocks, bones. And here's how it goes. You have a circular or an area that you would toss these items into that area. And usually whatever fell outside the circle wasn't relevant to the inside of the circle. So if they're reading or want to know what's coming up for the community or they're, you know, getting an insight from the spirits, then they would look at how these items have fallen into the circle, how they're laid together, how they cross over each other. If there's more on one side than the other side. And these items would tell a story. From there, you know, of course, there's lots of symbols. We go on to the symbols through time as language has evolved. And everything from, well, there's Viking runes are probably one of the most popular for casting runes. You know, you have a pouch of runes, and I should actually inject this here because there's different runic languages that are used in different kinds of readings. And there are a specific number of casting runes. It seems to me there's 16 of them. And so they would, you know, throw them out of their pouch, and whatever stayed within the circle was were the symbols that were relevant to telling the story. So there's so many kinds of, you know, divinatory arts. Of course, we go into palmistry. Phrenology, for that matter, is reading someone's face. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can feel the lumps on somebody's skull to tell them, you know, who they are, how they are, and a little bit about their character and their life path. So there's just so many, 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 many. People usually find that one thing they connect with, or two or three things. So you have rocks may mean nothing to you, whereas you know, little sticks with symbols on them might mean something to you. Palmistry might mean something to you, but astrology is off the charts. So everyone has their own attraction. I like to study them all a little bit because I want to know where I see things, what, you know, where the stories are. Clouds are probably one of the most phenomenal things to read. Sometimes they're just clouds, but something might trigger. You know, you look up and you say, oh, wow, there's a dragon up there. You know? And it might just be a dragon, but if that impacts you in some way, it might have a story to tell. So, and then it would matter totally whether it's in the east, you know, the west, the south, or the north, because it could be a story of something coming or someone coming. So this clouds have many stories to tell, and of course, always relevant to the one who's viewing. And you got to know then, you kind of connect with, is that a message for me? Is that a message for someone else? Or is it a message for the family? So these things trigger our psyches. And that's my point. It triggers your own psyche to tell a story. You know, we were talking about energy signatures earlier. We are all interconnected with nature. We're interconnected with each other. And in that, sometimes we can have these things that pop into our minds that are symbolic, that tell us something about each other. And whether you're reading the water in a creek or how water flows up on these rocks, or there's a story somewhere. Really, the key, though, is to say, well, what does it mean?
Right.
So this is where we get into things like, ta-da, coffee grounds, which were, that was huge, a huge big thing in many of the European countries to be able to read coffee grounds, and I'll explain how we would do that in a minute. But the more popular one is how to read tea leaves in teacups. My great-grandmother was a teacup reader, much to the chagrin of the Lutheran Church, I might add.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yep. And it's very interesting to me, the numbers of people I have encountered who have an interest in reading also have someone back in their family who was also a reader. But I got to say, I think there was a whole underground of people, even 2, 3, 10 generations ago, who were readers. And that was not unusual. So whether it's the Wiccans or, you know, what you call witches somehow, there was always an underground of people, a tribal people in, from all corners of the earth who found their various ways of readings. So Catherine just posted in the chat room, Doug, if we differentiate between psychometry and reading things like teacups, clouds, or whatever else. You know, excuse me, this is what I mean by whatever impressions, whatever tool you use that impressions to your psyche. It's an impression of energy. And we're just accessing all different sources to activate that psychic ability, if you will. I'm careful about that word, but your intuition, it activates the stories that are told between us in the energy, because all energy has a story. So
psychometry would be more the touch.
Yes, absolutely.
Rather than the looking.
Yes, but again, somebody could have, you know, bagged those bones and put them up there and shaken them out themselves, and then the reader is there to read them. Mm-hmm. So again, it's, you know, when people shuffle cards, that's their energy signature now in the cards. So when you hold somebody's ring, for example, you get an impression of the energy from the ring. And if you're, see, you might be able to just tell a story about the wearer of the ring, but maybe that wasn't the original wearer. So you might hold that ring, and all you can get is an impression of who owned it the first time. And you may not get anything about, you know, necessarily the story from the one who has it now. So it's, you know, how it impressions upon you would be how you're connecting with that particular signature. So I hope that kind of helps a little bit. John is just asking, isn't it like a tool that opens your mind's eye to the universe of consciousness? Absolutely. And it's whatever vehicle that you use. Absolutely. So the point of tea leaves. Are you ready, Doug?
I am.
There's different kinds of tea leaves, obviously. The best ones are that I have found are like a Chinese tea leaves, a green tea, but they have they're not tiny. They're average size, and they kind of they aren't ground up too much, so they do take on different shapes. And then when the leaves swell, of course, then they take on a different shape as well, and they get a little larger. But you would put about the cup is really important, by the way, and you must have a saucer. So if you have a little plate, and preferably something that has just a little bit of a dip into the middle of it, and the cup, it's better if it has, like, it's wider at the top than it is at the bottom. So an actual teacup is best, not like a coffee mug. Coffee mugs are just harder to read. So if you have about, all you don't need very much, maybe a third or a quarter of a teaspoon of leaves, and you pour boiling water on top, and you just let it set. Now, it's funny, some people say they you can't put cream or sugar or something into a cup of tea, but that's really quite nonsense. Whatever it takes, if you need to add a bit of sugar to the tea to drink it, that's fine. But the point is then you drink your tea with just, you know, and you sift, I know it sounds kind of gross, but whatever leaves are there, try to sift them through your teeth a little bit so they stay into the cup. But there should be still just a little bit of tea at the bottom so that you can, when you're done, and only at the instruction of the reader, you would swish those tea leaves around and turn your cup over onto your saucer. Now,
so let me ask a question at this point.
Yes.
Why go through the process of drinking the tea? Why not just put a little water in there and, you know, get the tea leaves moist and go from there? Is actually drinking it important?
Well, you're just taking all the fun out of it, Doug.
Oh. Well, far be it for me to do that.
You know, you're absolutely right. Honest to God, you're absolutely right. You can just put a little bit, hopefully enough in there that the tea leaves will sit and swell a bit. Then you swish your cup around and turn it over.
And I thought you were going to tell me, oh, no, you got to drink it because that's how they absorb the energy of the person and that will only help you, you know, all the other stuff. So.
I know. You see, these are the... without the performance, you know, it's like there's all the magic of it. And it just, I love reading teacups. It's just so fun because there's a whole ritual involved. And it's social. You know, it's this whole social connecting with someone. So when you drink your tea, you become a part of the process. And you know, it's just that connecting. So you get a bunch of ladies sitting around drinking their tea. They're having fun. And so then they... turn their cup over, and as my old teacher had taught me, the old gypsy way, is then you put your hand on the top of the cup, you make a wish. You have to make a wish. You turn the cup 3 times, and then you pass it to the reader. So, gee, Doug, is there anything to the wish? It's fun.
Yeah, well, I imagine there is, but you turn the cup, meaning you spin it around?
You just turn the cup on the saucer. The cup is turned upside down.
Right.
And you just turn it 3 times, clockwise, preferably.
And then make a wish, or before you make a wish? After, right?
Any time through the process is fine.
Okay.
I know, you're kind of laughing about this point.
I'm not laughing.
It's the process. Yeah. It's the process. It just adds to the experience and the fun of it. But here really comes the abilities that are next. When a reader turns the cup over, and this is where the saucer is important, because if there's been a little bit too much liquid, how the liquid in the saucer sits can tell a story, because it's formed an image. And whatever is that first image is generally part of the story to tell. You know, it could be that if it can look like a teardrop, whether somebody's had a lot of tears in their life or going through an experience that's quite emotional that's creating tears. It could also mean if you look at it and you say, oh, that looks like a lake. It's whatever, you know, and that somebody could be taking a trip or they just got back from a trip. So it's whatever impressions to your psyche and story it wants to tell. Now, when you look into the cup, here's something important. When you look into the cup, whatever leaves are closer to the top of the rim versus way down at the bottom, whatever's at the top of the rim closer is the closer in the future. Things that are the leaves that are sitting down at the bottom generally is the future yet to come, like down the road. And again, you might feel that, oh, that looks like it's 6 months from now, because it's whatever impressions to you in your story that the cup is trying to tell you.
So you're using this in conjunction with psychic ability?
You know, and I believe anybody who goes to read a cup, and I mean anybody, you are going to access your intuition. I totally believe that. Because you're now stepping out of what's familiar to you. I know a lot of people, in teaching them how to read cups, they'll say, oh, it just looks like a bunch of leaves to me. And I say, okay, you know, just kind of blur your vision a little bit, stare at it, and see what kind of comes to your mind. You know those really bonkers big posters where they have, you know, like a zillion fish on them, Doug, and this, some are different, and then it pops out a picture? You know, it's kind of like that. It's like something is trying to, you know, something in there is different. So where's Waldo? You know, it's in there. So just keep looking at it. Turn it around. What do you see? We could say it's like accessing imagination. What does your imagination say? So you look at this and you say, I see a puppy. You know, there's a little puppy in there. It looks like the puppy is standing on its back feet and it's dancing. Well, what is a puppy? You know, a dog or a puppy symbolically is a best friend.
Right.
And that's how you start to tell the story. Wow, I see a dog in here, and it feels to me like your best friend is there, and they're very happy, and they're celebrating something. So this is what I mean by looking at the symbols. You could have three or four leaves over on one side of the cup all by themselves. And what's the first impression? Oh, I see like four people going somewhere, and they're all by themselves. Like they're, and it could be then you have an impression of, oh, you and your friends, I see this dog over here, but then over there, four, it's like you could be getting together, like four friends are getting together and going on a trip or a little retreat of some kind. And hopefully they're not Amazon women, you know?
Well,
it's whatever.
It could be the other way, too. Hopefully they would be Amazon women. You know, it depends on who you are.
That's true. But the point is that there's a story in there. You might see a little castle. You might see animals. You could see prehistoric animals. That could be a story in itself. That could mean somebody's going to a desert. It's whatever it impressions to you to tell the story. And in my experience, it's amazing how much accuracy. It's just learning how to tell it, but it's amazing how much accuracy there is when people start looking into a cup. So it'd be something for you and Tracy to do, Doug, if you want to have a cup of tea. You know, empty a few, if you just, all you have is like bag tea, just empty a few leaves into your cup and drink it. It's a process. Have fun. And then just turn it over and then look at each other's cup and say, what do you see? And let your mind's eye tell the story. And you'll get better at it as you step out of what we're mentally comfortable with. It's like to get into, we think it's imagination, but really we're tapping into something entirely different. And I truly believe that with a little experience, it might become a lot of fun too. So,
Have to give it a try.
There's Catherine's asking, is there a way to validate a reading of tea leaves, or are they of future events yet to come? You know, that's actually a really good question, because if you're more the intuit or the sensitive that can see the present and you're getting signatures off of the individual and something about their life impressions, you might be a reader who speaks more about the now, and what you see is, you know, results of that. If it is the future and you have nothing to go by today that's going to confirm it to you or validate, as you're saying, you're going to have to trust yourself and just let it go, Catherine. At some point, you just have to say, I'm going with what I feel because it feels right. And you'll get more in tune with that right feeling. And in time, you might get some feedback from people to say, wow, that was pretty good. Never get too hung up on the feedback, though, because then sometimes we want to try too hard. So we want to be really good the next time.
Uh-huh.
And it's just let it go and trust that you're in a learning process and you're getting a little bit of feedback about future predictions you've made, and just keep moving forward. Keep expanding your intuition, keep expanding your ability to interpret symbols. If I can impart to anybody when it comes to the arts of divination that I think is really important, study symbols. Symbols are, not only are they fascinating, but it really is the hook to learning how to interpret different kinds of divination and different kinds of impressions that we each have. So do you know a little bit more about teacups, Doug?
Yes, I do. Well, it's interesting because it coincides with what I've learned in psychic development anyway, is to, you know, basically shut up your mind and listen. You know, what's coming through? What impressions? What are you picking up? And I have learned not to necessarily discount anything, just what pops into my mind when I'm actually trying to do this. And it's been interesting because it's been right quite a few times. And so I see some similarities, some overlays, if you will, on these tea leaf thing. You know, it's like, what in your experience, what does an apple mean to you? What does a, you know, like you used a puppy, what does a cat mean to you? What do you see? It's like looking at the clouds and reading the clouds. You know, what shapes do you see?
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's a great exercise in expanding your consciousness and your imagination, too, and seeing where it goes.
You know, absolutely. When you talk about an apple, that could mean to some people temptation, but it could also mean good health. An apple a day keeps the doctor away.
Mm-hmm.
It's whatever your mind impressions and whatever feels right at that moment. And undoubtedly, it's the first thing that comes to your mind is the correct one to go with. When you go into that doubt place, then that's your intellect trying to make logic of it.
Or overthinking it, yeah.
It usually doesn't work at all. So, but you're right. What does a cat mean to you, or what does a dog mean? Now, very often, a story will impression on your mind. You're seeing something, and you say, gee, that reminds me of when I was in grade 3. It doesn't mean that your story is important. It just means that it's triggered something in your psyche that can be brought forward to interpret into what you need to see for somebody else. So it's like, oh, that reminds me of, oh, I know what this means for you. So it's just to go with that, absolutely.
Hmm.
Anything
well,
else you want to add in here, Doug, before we have to say goodbye to another hour? It's fun.
Yeah.
It's a great topic.
Yeah, No, I appreciate the information on tea leaves. I always wondered how they did that and what the process was, so it's good to learn that. Have to give it a try sometime and kind of, you know, use a similar approach to other things, too. So, thanks.
Well, and hopefully people can do this at home. You can have your girlfriends together or your guy friends. People sit around and just go for it. Have fun. You know, again, saying goodbye to another Sunday. And thank you to everybody who's joined in and to all the people in the archives who are going to be, you know, pushing the play button. Thank you very much. We are here every Sunday. I'm at 7 o'clock out in the mountain time, and it's 9 o'clock Eastern time. So for anyone who will come in next Sunday and tell your friends about us, and thank you again for joining in.
And you'll be in Sedona next Sunday.
I will, so I'm very excited.
And you
about
have a
that.
Special guest too? Not next week, the week after.
Actually, Shauna is joining us the week after, so we're looking forward to that. Shauna's going to talk about her studies and her work and being a part of IMHS. So, looking forward to that show too. We have some really good shows coming up, so we hope to keep it interesting for people and tell your friends about us, and the more the merrier. So,
and
thanks again, everyone.
And thanks to John Hightower for working behind the scenes, and have a great week, everybody.